The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Have the changes in the banking industry affected you? With the looming possibility that your local bank branch might disappear and more web, mobile, and social technologies, what will the changes mean for you and your business? Welcome to Breaking Banks with your host, Brett King. The possibility that banking is no longer a place you go, but just something that you do, has become very real. Now, here is Brett King.
Welcome to Breaking Banks for this week. This week we are going to delve into the much debated topic, of course, of how mobile banking is affecting the role of brick and mortar branches and looking at changing preferences of customers. A couple of weeks ago we had a great show where Capgemini came in and did some research, and they're talking about changing customer expectations. The real challenge, of course, is that if we are seeing a dramatic shift in consumer behavior and the way they interact with the bank, then we have had a strong dependency on revenue in branch. And if people aren't visiting the branch, then what's going to happen to the revenue? And if the revenue starts to be delivered through other channels, then does the branch just end up being a very, very expensive service channel? I think you guys know where I stand on this front because I've talked about it enough. At this point, I'd like to invite our first guest, Michael Beard. Michael's the co-founder of Bankers Hub. We're doing a couple of things together, actually, with Bankers Hub and you're also a former practice director for JD Power and Associates, so you still do a bit of stuff with those guys. And I think you're a friend of my pal, JP Nichols, who's a regular on the show as well, right?
I am.
So welcome to the show.
Thank you, Brett.
So what led you to found Bankers Hub or be part of that formation?
Well, we really saw, in my previous life, I was with the Bank Administration Institute doing live conferences like retail delivery. And I think when 2008 and the recession impacted everybody, one of the areas that it impacted probably more than many others due to declining budgets and spending was the area of live conferences and live education. And that really represented a great opportunity, I felt, and teamed up with a colleague, Aaron Handel, and we launched Bankers Hub as our most recent offering as an online webinar and virtual education business with both, traditional webinars and live streaming from conferences like what we're doing on Monday with Net Finance in Miami is really an opportunity to try to deliver education to bankers without necessarily requiring that they get on a plane and fly somewhere. It's not anything necessarily new, but certainly something that is responding, we believe, to the needs of the industry.
Absolutely. It's funny, actually. I cop a lot of flack. I don't know if that's an Australian term, actually, cop a lot of flack, but I don't know what the American translation would be. But I get a lot of grief, cop a lot of flack over the fact that I still do a fair bit of speaking. And everyone's saying, well, if digital's so cool, then how come you need to speak at all of these conferences? But I say, well, if people are going to invite me, I'll talk, especially when it comes to the disruption of banking, right? There is obviously an economic shift in terms of spending on training dollars and those sort of things. And video is just such a part of our life these days. Tell me about the demand that you're seeing. What are people looking for you guys from Bankers Hub for at the moment? What are the hot topics?
More than anything else right now, Brett, hot topic is kind of into two tranches. One is definitely regulatory. So as much as we may not like it, the federal government is certainly providing us here in the U.S. and overseas with a fair amount of educational opportunity, and there seems to be no end in sight. So most of our webinars and many of our conference material is around new regulations, trends coming out of the CFPB, our friends there at the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. And then the second tranche that we really look hard in is the payments and mobile payment space. What's coming in new technology, new trends, what bankers need to know. Because, again, we're really B2B and focusing in on educating bankers in that area. So those are the two main areas. Traditional education topics, not quite so much. I think people still prefer live in-person education for many of the more traditional topics. But certainly those are the two main areas that we're seeing a lot of traffic in.
And in respect to the sort of people that are using Bankers Hub, is it more grassroots staff or is it across the board?
More grassroots, frontline mid-managers, people who would maybe 10, 15 years ago would have traveled to the Holiday Inn or to a local seminar for the day. Budgets having been what they are with staff being cut, we're just seeing a lot less of that. And because now the adoption of virtual technology enabling people to watch webinars and virtual broadcasts like this on their iPads, iPhones, Droids, really makes it a lot more compelling for the rank and file and for mid-managers to be able to take advantage of that, as opposed to being out of the office for a day, sometimes two if they're going to a live conference.
I'm really glad you mentioned the iPad, sort of the tablet and the mobile approach, because it's one thing I've been talking a lot about recently is the explosion of video on mobile. And it's one of these things that is an interesting side effect that we didn't anticipate when the smartphone emerged. If you look back, I'm just trying to think of timing, maybe mid-90s, 2000, when we were, envisaging the future of these technologies, like things that would look like a smartphone. We would have things like people buying radio, buying music, downloading it to their phone, maybe doing some shopping, buying some flowers for their wife because they forgot their anniversary on the way home, or getting out of a taxi, and these sorts of commerce interactions. And we thought they might watch TV programs and things like that, but the medium of video has exploded. I mean, you've got these new video stars on Vine, like Lauren Geraldo or Princess Lauren, I think her tag is, or PewDiePie out of Sweden. This guy has 4 billion views on his YouTube channel, has 250 million views a month, which is compared to CNN, which gets 16 million views a month globally. This explosion of video content is incredible. So the ability to not only create but consume video across these tablet platforms is becoming a really primary use case. Are you guys building content specifically thinking about that medium?
We are. The live streaming, which we do where we go on site with our video technology and audio, we don't necessarily market it to bankers differently than we would an audio webinar, but we believe that very quietly bringing the opportunity to see speakers like yourself and others in the visual format just deepens the experience that customers are having, be they bankers or consumers, with the speaker. To be able to see the speaker live or via video, watch them gesture, see their make eye contact, if you will, parenthetically, is really brings a different dimension. I mean, we can't replicate a conference experience exactly, but we can certainly bring many more elements to it than just the audio. So we see this as one of our great opportunities in our medium and in trying to address the needs of bankers in the educational realm.
And on the aspect of the networking side of things, given networking is always a primary use case for attending a conference, Do you guys try and incorporate more social media elements and things like that to create some sense of community around Bankers Hub?
We do. We're probably not quite there yet in terms of really replicating the networking experience. You know, we rely on any of the more traditional social media sites to interact with bankers. In the experience itself, I mean, what we're really driving towards is try to see how do we replicate the networking environment that you experience at a conference. One of the areas that we're going to be launching later this year is a virtual conference environment, a 24-hour, 365 environment where you can interact one-on-one offline with other attendees at a webinar in this kind of virtual environment. So that it's not quite there yet. It's still kludgy, but I think that all of the other elements you mentioned earlier with iPads and tablets and people becoming more comfortable with the video experience is going to help bring that along. Whereas, again, 5 or 10 years ago, people were less comfortable with video. They're less comfortable with this media. Now, when you go to a virtual conference environment and you see other attendees and you can click on them and then interact with them one-on-one, I think people are becoming more accepting. Certainly the younger generation, the millennials and the Gen Y and to some extent the Gen X are gravitating more towards this type of medium than the older professionals.
Absolutely. No, I think that's absolutely key. So do you think that this is just part of that generational shift, that your business will grow as, you know, we start to look at younger people coming into the industry because they're just going to be a lot more comfortable with this medium?
I think it already is. I think, you know, if we look at the spectrum of financial services today, we're finding a lot of the employees in the front line, are younger, under the age of 40, if you will, and they've grown up with much of this technology. And we're not doing it justice if we're trying to deliver education according to old school. So what we're really trying to do is replicate education in a way that meets their needs, but not leave the older executives behind. So we do traditional webinars, and we do go on site to conferences because we know that we're going to see many of the executives at those live conferences, in part for the same reason you indicated earlier, Brett, that you go and you speak live at these. You can't replicate that personal experience that you get when you go to these conferences in person.
So now let's get back to the topic that we sort of introduced at the start, which is the role of in-person versus digital. And particularly, you know, we're seeing an explosion of mobile, growth and interaction right now where, if we're looking at the data, it's likely to be next year or the year after where mobile becomes the dominant day-to-day banking channel for most Americans. And as a result of this, we are also seeing a steady decline in the average number of visits that customers make to a bank branch on an annual visit, right? So, we can see the data on that. It's fairly clear. The challenge, of course, is if people aren't walking into a physical branch, that there could be, a revenue fall off here. So do you see a systemic shift here, or is it not happening yet? Are you starting to see bankers prepare for this and starting to think about delivery of mobile through non-branch channels?
In the bankers I've been talking to and many of our customers, yes, I think we're seeing it more with the top 10, the top 20 banks than we are perhaps with community banks. I think what you described absolutely is the shift. We're seeing it probably more in exponentially growing in the coming months and years. Also seeing in terms of some of the research, and as you had alluded in the introduction, I mean, I stay close with the customer sat research at JD Power, and there's a trend that we're seeing there in addition to the mobile space growing rapidly. We are seeing satisfaction with institutions declining among the self-service and the mobile customer. So right. I think that there's a warning call to these banks as well, that if you're not replicating the experience and helping address problems that people are having through the self-service channels, you run the risk of at the same time alienating them, and you won't know that they've left because, as you said, they're not touching the branches nearly as often as the more traditional bankers, bank customers do.
Absolutely. So what do you think the new skill sets? Let's look at 2017, 2020. Tell me about the bankers of this sort of this next generation of bankers, and what are the core skills that we're going to need to train and educate bankers to have?
Well, I think the role of the old traditional teller who just cashes checks is pretty much a thing of the past. We've got to really make sure our frontline staff that we have out there is trained on all facets of sales and service, problem resolution, that we've empowered them with the ability to resolve issues at point of contact with the customer, as opposed to having to send things up the flagpole and get a manager's approval, if you will. So very similar to what we saw in the contact centers 15 years ago, when automation like voice response units and automated attendance became pretty common, that the calls going to live people were more complex and problem-oriented than just what's my balance and did this check clear. We're seeing the same thing occur in the branches, where tellers and frontline staff now are having to deal with more complexity. There may be fewer customers, but these customers are taking a longer time to deal with. And oftentimes these are self-service customers who, because of lack of resources, were not able to resolve their problems through the mobile source or online. They came into the branch. Now, if the branch isn't equipped to handle those problems, those customers are going to take their business elsewhere.
Absolutely. And so, as we start to look at this sort of shift in the org chart, how's this going to change the way we think about revenue, the way we think about risk, and sort of what are the core metrics of the organization, do you think?
I think the revenue model is still going to continue to decline on the branch side. I think it's going to force branches to continue to reassess their fee structures, which is unfortunate. I think the cost of resources, we're going to have fewer people in the branch, but they're going to be higher priced because we're looking for more experience from them. So I think that it's going to continue to make the branch a challenge to get the most value out of, because brick and mortar is the most expensive channel, and live people are the largest expense on a bank's income statement, second only to interest expense and the like. I think that that model is going to be a hard-pressed one for banks to cost justify, and customer acquisition, especially among affluent and higher-end customers, if they're not achieving that through the branch, then the branch, I think we're going to really see a lot of the smaller ones go away.
Fantastic. Well, Mike, stick around. I just want to have a quick break, and then we're going to invite Dale Demas from Navantis onto the show to sort of continue this discussion. And then we'd like to get you to come back in. Maybe you might have some contribution to add during Daryl's section, but we also definitely get you back in to talk about the future in the final segment. So you can stick around.
Great. Thank you, Brett. Yes, I'm looking forward to it.
Fantastic. Okay, so you're with Breaking Banks. I'm your host, Brett King. We're talking the impact on brick and mortar from changing a consumer behavior around mobile and digital. And we'll be right back after this quick break.
The business community's first choice in Internet Talk Radio, Voice America Business Network.
Attend Payments 2014 to meet the forward-thinking leaders and disruptors who are transforming how we pay and get paid. Get a glimpse into the next wave of payments innovations and challenges through fast-paced interactive demonstrations, educational sessions, and a buzzing exhibit hall. Register now at payments.nacha.org. Payments 2014 is presented by NACHA, the Electronic Payments Association, the recognized leader in payment system education. The Payments Conference, transform imagination into strategic innovation. Register today at payments.nacha.org.
In sales, are you a lion or a vulture? Lions don't wait, they just go for it.
Vultures hang around until the lions are finished and just pick up the scraps. How can you set yourself apart as a lion? Join the other aspiring sales lions and listen to Forget Patience, Let's Sell Something with host Ty Maynard. You'll learn the tips and strategies of top sales professionals. You'll gain more clients at a faster rate and at higher margins. If you're a sales professional, business owner, or executive, listen in every Thursday at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 Pacific on the Voice America Business Channel.
Follow us on Twitter at VoiceAmericaTRN. Get the lowdown on guests, new shows, and your favorites. That's VoiceAmericaTRN.
From the boardroom to you, Voice America Business Network.
You are listening to Breaking Banks, featuring your host, Brett King. To reach the show today, please call 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or send an email to breakingbanksradio@gmail.com. Now, back to the program.
Welcome back to Breaking Banks. Before the break, we were talking with Michael Beard, and we're talking about Bankers Hub and their shift in strategy around creating an education platform for bankers that's based on the web, and their strong support for the digital medium across mobile and tablet. And of course, the impact of sort of those changing behaviors on the business from a skill set perspective and structure. So it'd be great to sort of bring in a little bit more of a research view as well to supplement this. So I've asked Daryl Demas from Novantas to join us, and you guys might recall we've had Kevin Travis on the show previously, and we're a big fan of the work that Novantas does. They've done some fantastic longitudinal analysis of the industry, so it gives us a sort of a unique view looking out. And I hope my sales pitch is not too strong there, Daryl, but welcome to the show.
I'm sure Kevin did a great job talking about that. Happy to be here, Brett.
Absolutely. So in terms of sort of the general direction that we're taking on this stuff, and I know we can sort of dive into, brand stuff specific, but that sort of gets overdone a bit. But what are some of the other factors that you guys are looking at right now that, you think will be very strong drivers moving forward in the retail FI space?
So I think interesting trend here is I don't think it's all that difficult to see the trend. I think the interesting part is how fast are these trends going to evolve, right?
Yeah, yeah.
The writing's on the wall for some of these activities shifting out of branches. The real trick is, can we predict how fast it's going to happen? In your prior section, you talked about transactions migrating, and we all see that pace, 5% a year roughly of transactions. And our theory is, too, it's really up to the banker now. The more technology you throw at automating transactions, the more transactions are going to decline. So we think that's an indicator of just how much investment the banks want to make at that. I think another interesting place is this notion that the branches are a remaining battleground for sales. And we've spent a lot of time looking at this upcoming rising rate environment and when it happens, and how will that impact product acquisition. So we think that's an interesting trend as well. So many customers are already shopping, certainly online, the web, or mobile before they buy. And if there's going to be a battleground for the checking account, how is that going to be impacted when rates start to rise and banks are really fighting for deposits again?
So, there's a challenge here as well, isn't there? Because checking accounts, your recent research has showed this, but checking accounts in the U.S. have actually declined in recent years, the number of net checking accounts.
Yeah, they are declining. Yep.
And we've of course seen this explosion in prepaid debit card use and things like that. But is there a fundamental issue here that the value proposition behind a basic checking account just isn't strong enough anymore?
Well, I mean, the payment system is shifting so that there are other powerful means to manage payments, and there will be some threat to the checking account. I don't see the core checking account as threatened, as you will, as the decline of transactions. So we still think that they're going to be an important hub for people. The question is, in the old days, the only place you got a checking account was at a branch. And even today, 90% of accounts are still purchased by branches. But we've never seen this confluence of the, you know, customer shift in behavior and adoption of technology at the same time that there are so many non-traditional bank competitors, and they're going to be fighting for not just savings and high-paying interest CDs, but they're going to be fighting for checking accounts.
And we've got, you know, we've got record spreads at the moment, but you know, as the interest rates come up, how's that going to affect the you know, the profitability of the accounts, do you think?
So historically, banks couldn't wait for the rising rate environment, and they would sit back and they would let rates rise, and their margins would get fatter and fatter as rates rose. And they could charge more on loans and their checking and savings accounts. They would lag the give back. And in fact, in the last cycle, I think we determined that the banks, you know, every time the Fed moved, the banks would move at like 40% of the Fed move. So they're constantly improving margins throughout that. But now, there are these forces of people who are going to be fighting for that rate. And the direct banks who do not have this cost infrastructure that you spent a lot of time talking about rightly, are going to be able to afford to offer better rates, better mechanisms for customers who want to deal directly, and it's going to present quite a challenge to the banks around the country, both the national banks as well as the regional and community banks.
Absolutely.
And the national banks as well. The national banks are the ones who, because of their historic, you know, branch distribution networks and being everywhere, they could, you know, they could always afford to lag the most. But they're going to have the most competition from the direct bank. So it's going to be an interesting battleground. So your whole notion of branch costs, because already we see a decoupling of products. So the branch is no longer, you know, the most important reason why someone gets a mortgage, and no longer the most important reason why they're looking for investments. The branch is already second, third, or fourth on that list. It's really the checking account that has historically, and even in this time period, continued to be the highest reason why having lots of branches is still the highest reason why they'll pick a bank, but that's going to start to shift.
So let me give you a scenario. You know, we're looking at a lot of this technology, you know, coming into the handset right now. One of the more promising technologies is the host card emulation approach or tokenization, the ability to encode. A virtual card or authenticate a card holder at least from within the phone across NFC or Bluetooth. And you know, if you conceptualize that the potential of that capability, or really the maturation of the whole, you know, phone as a payment vehicle over the next few years.
Sure.
And then you have the ability to sort of download this app or a construct to your phone, which is essentially the same as the debit card you carry around today. And it has all the access capabilities of your traditional checking account, without checks, of course. But, you know, you can deposit checks, you can send money to friends, you can pay bills, and, you know, but more importantly, you can see your balance, you know, as you're transacting on a day-to-day basis. But this is now just as simple as downloading this account to your phone, maybe even signing up in your phone. What's the value proposition of the branch in that mix when you can download a bank account?
Yeah, I mean, I think we can all. I think that's another adoption issue. So I think that's a generation away. But it's only a generation or two away, right? So I think it's going to put a lot less emphasis on the branch. I mean, put a lot more pressure on why you would need a branch.
Right.
We're seeing a lot, I think, in the early stages of a lot of banks who are investing in this notion of the perception of convenience. And we've been helping clients build up their perception without having branches. Now, the question you raise is where distribution networks, physical networks still matter, the perception of convenience is filled in by billboards, ATMs, other physical assets. Real interesting question is, what kind of physical assets are you going to need when people can basically download checking accounts? Mm-hmm. Where's that perception of convenience? Is it going to be totally driven from an online point of view? advertising, and who's going to be able to afford that kind of advertising? So you do get, you do start to get a ripple effect of you know, the ability to acquire and easily use checking accounts through other means.
Yeah,
I mean, many of us have not used a branch for, forget the checking accounts, just the mortgages and other products. We don't need them. So, and have it for a long time, and there's been lots of competitors to that space. So I think the checking battle is going to be really the interesting one that's going to drive the banks to change this structure of what branches are going to be doing and how many of them you're going to need.
Now, and I've got a theory on that, which is, you know, I'd like to hear your thoughts on, but I think, you know, five to 10 years out, with the increasing capability of all these technologies and the ability to do most of our day-to-day banking stuff remotely or through the mobile, you know, and tablet, that, you know, the key use case for going into a branch in the future might not be, hey, I want to go in to get advice, but I've got a really sticky problem that I haven't been able to solve through any of these digital channels, and I need a human to solve this problem for me. And that really does change the skill set of mix of people in the branch in a few years' time.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, people still like to go places, right? So you look around and you take an abstract perspective of stores. You say, how do any stores ever survive, right?
Yeah.
But people still do like to go places. There will be still mobility. I think we're going to see these pressures create a bigger push to combining your branch with other businesses, a branch business with a educational or training company, or
right,
a law company or accounting or retail where people really do need to come in and buy. You know, banks have talked about it, but no one really pushed this heavily. Combining of banks and tax preparation, even though that's another industry under huge pressure from the mobile. But those kind of combinations are going to make a lot more sense, I think down the road. And that's where we're going to see a significant amount of pressure. But I think that's coming two generations away. The other problem, of course, we have, Brett, is cash.
Right.
There doesn't seem to be any adoption curve we see quickly going after cash.
Yeah.
I wrote a piece 20 years ago on, you know, isn't it crazy? You armored cars driving around. They're like, you know, the way cash was moved back in the 1800s still, in these big cars with guards. You know, not much has changed. And there are a lot of branches, especially community banks, that are, you know, serve small businesses and have just amazing amounts of cash preparation processing. They may still prove to be more efficient than picking it all up and bringing it to a central place. So we'll see some of that until we solve the cash problem. That's one thing that doesn't get much attention in this dialogue, but
No, but I think you know that's a fair point, particularly the small business angle. You know, the small business that deals with cash, you know, where do they go to deposit it? There's still I'm often presented with this issue. You know, what a small business is going to do,
right.
But I mean, me personally, I can't remember, and I'm talking 15 years here. Since I left Australia, I first went to Hong Kong back in 99. I can't remember even back that far going into a branch to deposit cash personally.
Right.
It's not a use case that I don't know how many of us actually go into a branch and deposit cash. It's really only cash businesses, right?
I never did. I had my own business for a long time, and you know, my CFO or bookkeeper would sometimes go and physically deposit checks, but, you know, why not scan them and get them in the system? There's a lot of different ways. And so if you are a non-cash business, of course, you're particularly open to non-traditional branch structures. If you're a cash business, your retail, you're taking in, or you know what's interesting is the medical facilities now. There are a lot of small walk-in medical clinics, you know, CVS, Rite Aid. They actually take in a lot of cash. So they still have to put the cash somewhere.
Well.
Yeah. But those combinations, look what they've done with their physical facilities, right? The drug stores who saw a fault on their business with the mail delivery, which is more efficient and timely and consistent. And now they're, you know, the drug stores are now supermarkets and they're walk-in healthcare facilities. They're finding the things that people need to physically go and do. And that's creating a value proposition for them. And banks are going to have to do that at some point with their branches. Much more creativity than we've seen so far.
Absolutely, because it's no longer about, hey, this is where you open your account, or this is where you come and get advice. Because those things may be able to be done just as effectively or more effectively, or certainly with lower friction through other channels. They're very interesting. Tell us a bit more about where Novanas is focused on the research front right now, and what you see as some interesting, exciting areas that you guys are pursuing.
Yeah, so obviously the topic we've been talking about here on this call, this issue, what to do with my networks, whether you're 10 branches or 5,000 branches, people are concerned about that. So both our research and our analytics are helping people attack those problems, and bringing ideas like you bring to the forefront of, you know, how to think creatively. And of course, they're trying to balance this revenue picture with innovation, and that's not always the easiest thing for bankers to do. We're also very deep in this whole issue of products and the, you know, how do products behave differently, and this coming rising rate environment, how is that going to impact these trends? And then the other part that we're really trying to help banks with their cost structure is delivering analytical tools. So the kinds of tools the biggest of banks have and use to make better decisions, the kinds of things we're talking about here, smaller banks don't necessarily have them. So we've been retooling our entire product set to help community and regional banks basically obtain the same kind of analytical power that the large banks have. And that's been actually a very fun and exciting place. I've been spending a lot of time there. They need to make smart decisions just like the large banks, and it's been fun helping them acquire the data and the tools to make those decisions.
Absolutely, and I think you guys do a great job, so thanks for your contribution to the industry too.
So Darryl, let's just
take a quick break, and then we'll invite Mike back into the conversation, and let's maybe delve into some structural issues. What's the business of banking look like? How the neobanks and other new distribution plays going to affect it, and how the regulator is going to respond. Let's dive into a bit of that in a bit more detail in the next segment. You can stick around.
Sounds great. Sure will. Looking forward to it.
Great. Great, so let's have a quick break, guys, and we'll be right back in a few moments to continue the Breaking Banks dialogue.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
Your bank's customers expect comprehensive, convenient, and consistent service when and where they need it. A mobile app is a great start, but with so many devices and operating systems out there, it can be hard to keep up with demand. That's why today's leading banks count on the Kony Multichannel Experience Cloud. With Kony, you can design, develop, and manage multi-channel apps from one integrated platform. Build an app once, and with one click, you can deploy it securely across all digital channels, phones, tablets, desktop, and more. That means more efficient for you and a better experience for your customers. Want to get to market fast? Explore Kony's range of ready-to-run apps, including retail, commercial, and private banking. With features like person-to-person transfers, targeted campaigns, built-in integrations, and cutting-edge compliance, Kony apps provide the framework and flexibility you need to rise above the competition. Go beyond first-generation mobile banking. Visit kony.com/BK to launch your multi-channel strategy. That's KONY.com/BK.
We're making it easier to listen to the Voice America Talk Radio Network live wherever you go on iPhone, BlackBerry, or Android. Download it from the Apple iTunes App Store, BlackBerry App World, or Android Market.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network. You are listening to Breaking Banks, featuring your host, Brett King. To reach the show today, please call 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or send an email to breakingbanksradio@gmail.com. Now, back to the program.
Welcome back to Breaking Banks. You're on the show this week. We're talking about changing behaviors, and which is a common theme of the show. But we're delving into a little bit more of the skill sets and the strategic needs of the banking business moving forward in terms of productivity and skills of the staff, org structures, metrics, things like that. And underpinning it, obviously, with a discussion around changing consumer behavior. So, Michael, before the break, we were talking with Daryl about some of these, some of the research and the way these things are moving. But with this different dynamic appearing, and maybe one of the best ways to sort of illustrate it, or good illustration, is what we saw happen with the bookstores. You know, when you could download a book to your Kindle, the imperative for visiting the bookstore or the instinct for buying a book had sort of fundamentally changed. And even though banking is a different business, what we're going to obviously see some of that as mobile becomes more dominant. How is that going to change the regulators' view of the world? I mean, there's still a lot of banks today that are very reliant on onboarding a customer in a bank branch because they get to do the paperwork and get people to sign a physical piece of paper. But when that's, when there's a definite shift away from that type of behavior, how are the regulators and sort of the more traditional community banks who've relied on that type of behavior or reinforced that type of behavior, how do you think they're going to respond?
Cautiously. I think that they're going to continue to respond the way that we've seen them respond, certainly over the last 10, 15 years. I think there was a big push towards the online movement, if you remember, during the late 90s, and then 9/11 hit, and with the Patriot Act and KYC, the Know Your Customer, it set us back probably a good 5, 10 years as an industry where we pushed customers back into the branch to open those accounts. So to some extent, to portray the branch as being the purveyor of this is really perhaps not accurate. I think the regulators themselves really forced people back into the branches. And even when you opened accounts online, the final step in the account opening process was to have the people physically go into the branch, which was somewhat self-defeating, obviously. I think we're getting away from that today, but I think to expect the regulators to do anything different in the near future around this shift is delusional, I think, because I think they're going to continue want to keep a heavy hand on the identification process and control.
So I don't know whether you guys saw the announcement that Starbucks looking to white label their app. Did you guys see that announcement a while back? So, this is an interesting example of where you've got these pseudo debit cards, very simple closed-loop payment system, I'll grant you. You know, it's not a MasterCard or a Visa that you can use everywhere. But, you can imagine, this becoming a fairly reasonable competitor to a debit card. As more and more retailers use this type of app infrastructure. But it is really, it's a very simple form of a debit card. You could call it a gift card or whatever. You know, Starbucks took $2 billion in deposits last year on the cards. They're processing 5 million transactions a week on the platform right now. And so you've got a pretty good use case here for a very simple debit card or payment card or bank account, if you want to look at it structurally. Okay, sure, there's not an FDIC a guaranteed deposit on a Starbucks card, but you do now have a very simple onboarding process. Now look at a checking account, and comparatively, the amount of workload required for a customer to open a checking account in a bank today, it seems absolutely out of control, in comparison with the Starbucks paradigm. So is this a problem where we're just too heavily regulated in respect to some of these basic KYC, I know your customer, and identity verification constraints? What are your thoughts, Daryl?
So maybe what we'll see, Brett, I mean, yeah, I think regulatory environment creates a bit of a headwind because they are slow to understand the technologies being used. But maybe inside of that, we'll see, you know, some regulations and banks supporting the ability to simplify accounts, you know, tiering them based on usage. So maybe banks, you know, banks should be in a position to support some of these very simple payment mechanisms. They should be copycats. They should be copying these capabilities. Banks still do have a lot of good customer information. They know a lot about you. And the sooner they get on board with replicating some of these other capabilities, the better off they're going to be. And then regulators will be forced to face up. I mean, Starbucks, $2 billion. So they're like, you know, they're holding the deposits of a, you know, small community, a community bank right now, if your $2 billion number is right. You know, what will change that? Some fraud could happen, and then the regulators will have to pay attention to it. So there's a lot of interesting headwinds out there, but the technology is evolving and making it much simpler.
I wonder. Are you guys familiar with Fedor out of Germany?
I'm not. No.
So you know these guys. You should check out their structure. Basically, what you describe, Daryl, it's exactly how they go about account opening. You can start a very basic payments account, which enables you to do sort of simple P2P stuff, only with your Facebook details, right?
Right.
Then, if you want to actually have a value store, where you actually store stuff, or you want to save, or you want to invest, you know, the KYC ratchets up. So they have a sort of a very interesting progressive KYC model. You know, why can't it be a little bit more like that? If you think actually about, you know, a Starbucks app, and then a prepaid card, and a, you know, a full blown checking account with an overdraft. That's actually the structure we've got. Why don't we see a bit more creativity around, you know, those types of behavioral differences when it comes to onboarding customers within banking today?
Well, Mike,
do you want to go first?
Well, I was just going to say, I think we're seeing it, but we're seeing it from the periphery. I don't know that we're seeing it from the traditional institutions. I had a chance to, on the small business space, to co-present with Bill Clerico at WePay a year or two ago at Money 2020. And what was fascinating is they're using the social media as their means of validating small business owners, as opposed to using FICO or DNB to determine whether they're going to provide merchant services to small businesses. And by small, I mean really micro businesses. I think that kind of creativity we're seeing, but we're not seeing it from the traditional banks who are risk averse. We're seeing it from the periphery, from the fringe.
Well, and they're not just risk averse, Mike, too. They're profit averse. So banks, if you go inside the strategies of most of the traditional sort of regional and national banks, there's so much talk about the affluent customer and the high profit account. What you're talking about are accounts that actually will not look or be very profitable on the entry point, but they get you into a business so you're not excluded. So banks aren't thinking that way. And I wonder if there won't be a trend, as we've seen in the past, you know, we had good bank, bad banks, and banks actually splitting themselves up, if we're not going to see banks thinking about a legacy bank and a mobile bank and actually evolving a different way of thinking against product and program to make sure that the mobile bank evolves at the pace that it needs to evolve at to stay current with all these other competitors. I'd be taking a hard look at that if I were running a bank these days.
And does that then result in sort of a more significant shift where we start to see various players at the front who really specialize in distribution? They really get these mechanics right. But they may be a front end to another bank who they'll let maybe the front end guys deal with the risk or deal with the technology or the different approach to this so that they can then just focus on the sort of core banking stuff. What do you think?
Mike?
I would say absolutely. I think we're seeing elements of that already, but only among the top players, at least here in the U.S. I think banks with capital like Bank of America, Wells Fargo, who have always been somewhat at the leading edge, relatively speaking, at the leading edge of this, are have taken that approach because they have the resources to be able to split that off. But I absolutely think that that's the future model, to be able to start to bifurcate those models, and that way you've got a group of thought leaders and innovators who aren't being held back by the more traditional networks.
Now, maybe I can direct this one at you, Daryl, and Mike, I'm sure you'll have some thoughts about that as well. But in terms of, Daryl, you talked about the profitability of the basic checking account. You know, that's been, the challenge of profitability has been increasing, and you guys have done some good research on that as well. But there's various figures. You'll see, you know, figures from 45% to or 35% to as high as 70% of checking accounts are unprofitable today. And you know, we saw the very famous push of B of A during the financial crisis to try and deleverage themselves from some of these accounts with the $5 monthly charge, and we know how that worked out for them. And then, you know, we see the compound annual growth of prepaid, you know, at sort of 18-20% over the last few years. And you've got this situation where whether you classify it as this newly debanked generation or just those that are on the marginal underbanked or unbanked side of things in the United States, you have a segment that's not really well served by the traditional checking account today, and then this growing group of people who are unprofitable from a traditional perspective. Does that mean we're going to see a real change in, if you have these lean models that come in that can focus on these less profitable segments because they have much lower distribution cost and much lower acquisition cost, you know, how does that change the mix of the local community banking model?
Well, that's the theory, right?
What are your thoughts around that? Is the theory valid or?
Yeah, no. I think the problem is how does a single bank manage that entire spectrum? They're not geared toward managing the low cost, low margin, you know, acquisition, remote acquisition type of customer, and the traditional banking customer they think of, because they still, as long as they have these physical facilities, they're going to have to pay for them, and that's part of the problem. So they're trying to use them as low cost, fill the seats, the analogy of the airplane, right? Fill the seats with coach and make your money off of business class. And they're still pursuing that strategy today. But as you say, the economics of those who are not served well by checking accounts are changing dramatically, and so they might end up in a blank space where the low end customers really are looking for something much simpler than the bank is offering. And so the high end customers maybe are perfectly fine with what the bank's doing, but they're not going to be using those branches much. It's going to be another threat to the networks.
Yeah,
I don't know
absolutely.
If that answers your question or not, but
I think that is the question. Mike, what are your thoughts?
Well, and again, with the misstep that B of A took two years ago, if you look at why not migrating those customers over to similar to what the government's done, it's taken the government a lot longer to get around to doing it, but migrating them over to value stored cards, and they, you know, do they really need those types of traditional services? So instead of looking for necessarily those customers to be a driver of fee income, which was the B of A misstep, just really reducing the overhead associated with maintaining those customers and getting them onto what like Green Dot's doing, which is really a very strong replacement for many more utility services that a lot of people just want a banking account for. So you just migrate them over to a stored value card.
Yeah, and you don't even have to. You know, it maybe if there's a stigma with a thought of a stored value card, that classification is sort of fairly arbitrary bank classification. If you just call it you could call it a mobile deposit card.
Exactly.
You know? Maybe that's part of the problem. Maybe we're just not being creative enough in terms of the way we're positioning these accounts. I mean, I've always maintained one of the big challenges with a checking account these days is millennials just, you know, their instinct's not going to be to write checks. So if you're the first thing you're selling a Gen Y when they walk in your bank branch is a checkbook, you've already got a problem.
Yeah, my son's in college and needed a check, and he's had a checking account for years, and he had no physical check and no way to write one. And you're 100% right.
Do you guys know Dave Birch? He's been on the show a few times. I think Daryl, you know him.
Yep.
He said he was writing a check, and his son came home from college. He was writing a check, and his son asked him why he was writing a letter to the bank because he had no idea what it was.
Here's a good example of where the two worlds collide. We were signing up an employee for direct deposit, and what's the first thing that the payroll company wanted? They wanted a voided check, and this young employee goes, I don't have checks. I've never had checks. How do I get a voided check to satisfy a direct deposit requirement? So it's an example of even payroll services still relying on an archaic instrument to try to sign someone up for a service that is paperless.
Brett, I do think it is fair to say some banks today who do charge fees and are able to do it with a good value proposition, you know, they're probably doing a pretty good job today, and hopefully they will adapt to the environment going forward. So you see, like a TD, for example, they do a nice job. And they're, you know, they do charge a fee, but they have a value proposition that supports it. So they didn't get a rejection like B of A did when they maintained a charge fee. And, of course, you can get that fee waived if you have enough things. But so those some banks are trying to, are doing a nice job in managing, coming up with a reason to justify, you know, the value that they're expecting. And hopefully they'll also be adapting as new challenges come up.
Well, listen, guys, you know, I've been having such fun chatting about this that I've completely lost track of the time, and we've run out of time. In fact, we're about to go over, so I've got to wrap up quickly. But Daryl Demas from Novantas, Managing Director, looking after the productivity and solutions business, thank you for joining us.
My pleasure.
Where can people find out about Novantas? Novantas.com, is that the best place?
Yeah, that usually works. Novantas.com is good.
Great. And Michael Baird, co-founder of Bankers Hub. Michael, again, the URL for Bankers Hub?
Bankershub.net. We'll get you there.
Fantastic. Thank you both for joining us on Breaking Banks this week. Love to have you back sometime so we can continue the conversation. You've been with Brett King, and that is another episode of Breaking Banks. Thanks for joining us.
You've been listening to Breaking Banks with host Brett King. Please be sure to join us again next Thursday at noon Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel. We'll explore more changes and challenges next week.